Welcome to SCOTUSCast, a project of the Federalist Society for Law and Public Policy Studies. Our contributors join us from around the country to bring you expert commentary on U.S. Supreme Court cases as they are argued and decisions are issued. The Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker.
Thank you for joining us for this post-argument episode of SCOTUSCast. I'm your host, Grace Gotchlin. On May 13, 2020, the Supreme Court heard oral arguments in a pair of cases concerning the Electoral College. In Colorado Department of State v. Baca, the court will consider the claim of a presidential elector in Colorado who attempted to vote for someone other than Hillary Clinton, despite the fact that Hillary Clinton had won Colorado's popular vote. In Schiaffalo v. Washington, the court will hear the claims of three presidential electors who were each fined $1,000 after they voted for a candidate other than Hillary Clinton in 2016, who also won Washington's popular vote. The cases will examine state power to regulate the actions of presidential electors and could affect how electors behave in the 2020 election. And now, to discuss the case, we have Michael Morley, assistant professor at Florida State University College of Law.
Although over 140 million people will likely be casting ballots in the presidential election this November, they are not really voting for president, but rather for a slate of presidential electors from their state. It is the presidential electors who actually vote for president when they convene within their respective states in December. Most states require their presidential electors to cast their electoral votes in accordance with the outcome of that state's popular vote. Some states fine so-called faithless electors who disobey these requirements. In other states, if an elector casts their vote for the wrong candidate, they are removed from office, the vote is ignored, and the state appoints a replacement elector to vote anew. A few jurisdictions do both. In Schiaffalo v. Washington, the Supreme Court is considering the constitutionality of faithless elector laws that impose some sort of legal consequence on a state's presidential electors who cast their electoral votes for someone other than the candidate who won the popular vote within that state. In Schiaffalo v. Washington, the Supreme Court is considering the constitutionality of faithless elector laws that impose some sort of legal consequence on a state's presidential electors who cast their electoral votes for someone other than the candidate who won the popular vote within that state. The petitioners are presidential electors from Washington State who were fined after casting their electoral votes for Colin Powell instead of Hillary Clinton, the Democratic nominee who had won Washington State. This wound up being something of a lopsided argument. Counsel for the faithless elector petitioners started out very strong, but appeared to dig himself into an increasingly deeper hole as he attempted to respond to each justice's questions. He argued that states cannot compel their presidential electors to cast their electoral votes in any particular way, including in accordance with the outcome of either the statewide vote or even the national popular vote. He based this conclusion on the ordinary expected meaning of the Constitution's words, as well as the background of the framers' deliberation. The Constitution's plain text, he argued, gives state legislatures authority to determine the manner in which their electors are appointed, but does not go further and give them authority to control those electors' votes. Even if presidential electors are state officials, he maintained, they are performing a federal function when they cast their electoral votes, and therefore cannot be constrained by state governments. Electors are free to cast their votes however they wish, subject only to political and moral constraints. He later added that the very notion of allowing an elector to cast an electoral vote implies that they have discretion over the candidate for whom to cast them. Washington State, he claimed, was asking the court to treat electors as its minions. Once the court's questioning began, however, the faithless elector's argument crumbled. Their claims were undermined by a series of problematic concessions, weak arguments, and faulty analogies. For example, the Electors Council conceded that states could require electors to pledge to support a particular candidate, as the Supreme Court had previously held in Ray versus Blair. He expressly admitted that while the framers did believe that electors would exercise independent judgment, they did not inscribe that belief into the text of the Constitution. The court could virtually decide the entire case on that concession alone. The Faithless Electors Council attempted to distinguish between legal duties and remedies. He argued that states may require electors to cast their votes in a particular manner and are only prohibited from imposing legal sanctions for violating such requirements. This appears to have been a strategic mistake. A state's authority to impose a duty, including the duty of presidential electors to cast their electoral votes in a particular way, generally carries with it the authority to take at least some steps to enforce that duty. The Chief Justice and Justice Ginsburg in particular seemed unpersuaded by the notion that although a state may legally require its electors to vote in a certain way, it cannot attach any legal sanctions. The analogies offered by the Faithless Electors Council did not appear to pick up any votes either. For example, he repeatedly compared the constitutional protection he sought for faithless electors to the speech and debate clause. Although members of Congress may promise to vote for certain measures, and it may be immoral for them to break such vows, he argued, the speech and debate clause bars states from holding them accountable for violating such promise. The Constitution, of course, does not contain any provision analogous to the speech and debate clause for presidential electors. Drawing attention to the absence of such a provision may have been a tactical mistake. Another faulty analogy was to jurors, who counsel argued could not be removed based on their verdicts. Yet Justice Sotomayor pointed out that a court may remove jurors who violate their oaths. Applying the petitioner's own reasoning, Justice Sotomayor asked, why couldn't states likewise remove faithless electors who violated their pledges to vote for certain candidates? She further pointed out that petitioner's argument also raised serious tensions with the court's holding in McPherson versus Blacker. McPherson recognized that, as far back as 1892, the Electoral College no longer functioned as the framers may have originally intended. The Faithless Electors case was further weakened by a series of hypotheticals from the justices asking whether states could remove presidential electors on various grounds. For example, the petitioner's counsel agreed with Justices Thomas and Alito that a state could remove a presidential elector for taking a bribe. He likewise agreed with Justice Breyer that states could require electors to be permanent residents and remove an elector who moved to a different state shortly before casting an electoral vote. He even went so far as to agree with Justice Gorsuch by admitting that electors could be prosecuted for perjury for violating a pledge to cast their electoral votes in a particular way. Thus, even though electors perform a federal function, petitioner's counsel repeatedly acknowledged that they are subject to state regulation. States can remove them, punish them, or even nullify their electoral votes under certain circumstances. Perhaps most concerningly, the Faithless Electors Council concluded by frankly acknowledging the possibility that his position could lead to chaos. In a close election, there could be a massive nationwide campaign to influence electors. And if a handful of electors changed their electoral votes in a close election, thereby changing its apparent outcome, it would undermine our nation's stability. His only response, that such chaos was not very likely to occur, is unlikely to assuage the court's concerns. Counsel for the state of Washington sought to capitalize on the petitioner's missteps. He began by emphasizing the petitioner's concession that states can require electors to promise to vote for particular candidates. From the very first presidential election, he elaborated, states have been choosing electors specifically because they had promised to support a particular presidential candidate. If states can impose such requirements, he argued, they must be able to enforce them. Later in the argument, he also emphasized that the court's precedents establish a strong default presumption that the power to appoint an official, such as a presidential elector, implies a concomitant power to remove that person. Faithless elector laws are an exercise of that implicit constitutional authority. Turning to precedent, Washington's counsel emphasized the Supreme Court's holding that once states decide to appoint presidential electors based on the outcome of a popular vote, the constitutional right to vote attaches. He claimed it would violate that right to vote for an elector to cast their electoral vote in a manner completely divorced from any conception of the popular vote. In response to questioning from Justice Thomas, Washington's counsel noted that states have historically regulated electors in a wide variety of ways. They are not immune from state regulation simply because they perform a federal function. Justice Ginsburg mentioned that Congress has always counted faithless electors' votes. In response, Respondents' Counsel pointed out that in 2016, Congress also had counted the electoral votes of states that had replaced their faithless electors with new electors who cast their votes as required by state law. Thus, Congress cannot be said to have acquiesced in allowing faithless electors. Justice Breyer followed up by raising the possibility of leaving it to Congress to decide whether to count faithless electors' votes. Respondents' counsel explained that Congress's only choice in such cases would be to either count the improper votes or completely disenfranchise the state's voters by rejecting them. Allowing the state to remove faithless electors and appoint new ones, in contrast, is the only way of enforcing faithless elector laws in a way that ensures the state's electorate is heard. Respondents' counsel added that when an elector wishes to refrain from voting for the candidate to whom they are pledged, a state should have equal power to appoint a replacement, regardless of whether that original elector simply refuses to show up to vote or instead casts an improper vote. Washington's counsel did hedge on one of the toughest questions asked by Justice Alito, as to whether a state legislature could directly appoint electors and independently hold an advisory statewide popular vote for president, which those electors would be free to disregard. Counsel's uncertainty was unavoidable, however, as the court has never fully explained how the constitutional right to vote applies to the Electoral College. Finally, pragmatically, the state argued that allowing faithless electors would enable foreign powers to bribe or blackmail electors to change their votes. Moreover, the petitioner's position leads to the absurd consequence that everything that we think of as the presidential election process currently is really just advisory. If the court reaches the merits of this constitutional issue, rather than avoiding it on procedural or political question grounds, it appears likely to uphold the constitutionality of faithless elector laws. The real uncertainty seems to be the reasoning it will apply, whether its opinion will rest primarily on constitutional text, historical practice and liquidation, pragmatic considerations, the constitutional right to vote, or some combination of these factors.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. SCOTUSCast is a project of the Federalist Society, a not-for-profit educational organization of conservative and libertarian law students, law professors, and lawyers, founded upon the principles that the state exists to preserve freedom, that the separation of governmental powers is central to our Constitution, and that it is emphatically the province and duty of the judiciary to say what the law is, not what it should be. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast series, including SCOTUSCast and Practice Group Podcasts, on iTunes or Google Play. For an archive of past podcasts, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at fedsoc.org/multimedia. That's FEDSOC.org/multimedia.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.